time to talk with Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, who joins us on this Monday. Hello there, Chad. How are you, sir?
Hey, Rich. How are you doing?
Good. Sorry, we're running a little late. It's that chatty Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, that guy never stops talking or acting.
Unbelievable. It's crazy. But now, what this means is I think that you are now, you just have one degree of separation from Kevin Bacon.
That's great. I'm going to have to go and see if I have any other ones. Maybe a writer I've talked to or something like that. But we're all within two, right, at least.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So I guess I would call this the least surprising sports story in a while. Tom Brady, 40 days at home was all he could take, huh?
I think it's probably Giselle got tired of him talking to her about crypto and NFTs and decided he could go back and play. I'm going the other side. She drove him out. It wasn't the other way around.
I like that.
Yeah, it's not a surprise. I mean, we seem to notice 2 or 3 days after he announced on February 1st that he was stepping away from the competition, or however he put it, that he didn't actually mention the word retirement. And, we were all kind of yowling about how he didn't mention the Patriots or their fans or anything like that in there. Well, it kind of felt like a goodbye to the Buccaneers after you looked at it for a while. And I think you could start drawing conclusions, especially with all the rumors that were out there, that he was probably going to try to play again, maybe for a different team. And I suspect that was his plan, but he's under contract for another year with the Buccaneers. And seems like he just decided he was fine with sticking with them. And not really a big surprise. The NFL is better with Tom Brady in it, but it definitely was kind of a whole weird process.
I feel badly for the crew of Man in the Arena. They've got some scrambling to do.
Have you ever had Gotham Chopper on your show?
No.
No, he's the producer of those Tom versus Time and in A Man in the Arena and works closely with Brady and Michael Strahan on the production company. And he was expecting to have it done before the end of the NFL season, and then they put the hold on it, and that's when everybody gets suspicious that it was a retirement thing, but apparently Brady's going to retire and come back before they even show that last episode. So maybe he'll retire again before they get it out there. But people probably forgotten about that by now, right? That they really haven't even considered. They haven't seen the final episode of that whole arc.
Yeah, now another season. So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting. The question comes back up again. The famous Brady quote was, I'll retire when I suck. I guess we got another year to find out if he ever slips. I mean, I thought Bill Belichick thought he was slipping around 2018, that there are kind of cracks in the foundation. His arm strength wasn't quite what it was. You know, maybe not processing things quite as quickly as he did at his peak. Maybe even a little bit earlier than that, given that he drafted Jimmy Garoppolo in 2014, and Brady has outlasted anybody else's expectations but his own. But it's conceivable that this season doesn't go well for him at age 45, and either his skills decline a little bit, or injury, which he's really managed to avoid these last several years. To the point that hasn't knocked him out of games anyway. Maybe that gets him too. There's always some risk in playing another year in the NFL, especially at his age.
Yeah, and not that I'm Bill Belichick, I don't have his eyes, but I didn't see a whole lot of slippage last season. But at the same time, you can eat all the avocado ice cream you want, but Father Time's going to win and we'll catch up at some point. And he'll get out before this, I'm sure. But I'm old enough to remember watching Willie Mays trying to get around the bases in his last season with the New York Mets. And I don't want to see that from the greatest quarterback of all time.
No, nobody does. At least, isn't bitter about him leaving, and it really shouldn't be. But, he should have been the NFL MVP last year. It was almost the fait accompli that Aaron Rodgers won it. But if you go look at the stats, Brady led the league in what, passing yards and touchdown passes, and probably had to overcome more, and you know, didn't expose his teammates to potentially getting COVID by bending his back when he wasn't. All those usual MVP arguments. So I thought he should have won. I would have voted for him. I know one of our writers at the Globe voted for him. And even if he slips a little bit, what does that mean? He's a top 8 quarterback in the NFL, top 10 quarterback. So of all the remarkable things about his career, that he played at age 44 the way he did last year is right up near the top. And you know, maybe he's not quite the same this year, but you know, he's thrown off that whole aging curve more than in an abstract way, more than anybody else in NFL history. So I wouldn't doubt him.
We're talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. Let's talk broadcast sports a little bit, and the big news recently of Joe Buck going to ESPN for the Monday night broadcast to team up with Troy Aikman there. Was that a surprise to you, and how will the dominoes fall? How does that impact other places?
Yeah, I just did a podcast with my friend Richard Deitch at The Athletic today talking about this, and it's pretty interesting. There are a lot of different elements to it. I think one of the ones going to come into play is Monday Night Football is going to have a little bit more buzz than it has in a long time. I mean, if you look at the marquee event in terms of NFL broadcasting, it's been Sunday Night Football for about 15 years, the one you really anticipate and look forward to. When we were growing up, it was Howard, Don Meredith, and Frank Gifford on Monday nights, and they lost that luster somewhere along the way in the last 20 years, and they haven't had the same schedule of high-quality games on Monday night. But you put Buck and Aikman in there, and you look at what NBC is going to have on Sunday nights with Al Michaels gone, and it's Mike Tirico in there, and maybe Drew Brees at some point, who really hasn't impressed. Maybe in Monday Night Football gets a little bit of that buzz back with these two, but it really is a crazy free agency. The big question is what Fox is going to do in a couple different spots, because Joe Buck's called the World Series since 1996.
Right.
So they're going to have to probably be Joe Davis, who's a Dodgers broadcaster. And then their number one broadcast team will be somebody like Kevin Burkhart and Greg Olson, who was just a first-year broadcaster last year, the former Panthers tight end. So that is not going to quite have the high profile that Buck and Aikman gave them. Well, whether or not you like Joe Buck, and I really do, when you hear him call a game, you know it's a big game. And that's as we're finding out by the contract he's getting from ESPN, which is going to be about $15 million a year, you know, that's really, really valuable to have that big name attached to the big game.
All right, I have to ask you about this. Tell me why it is that you enjoy Stephen A. Smith and the Mad Dog going head to head on First Take. I say this having never watched it in my life. So,
I was talking myself through my mental anguish about it, and in writing a column about that. But one of my editors actually mentioned that she liked it, and you know, not really a big Stephen A. fan, but just would see the clips go viral from when Chris Mad Dog Russo, host the show on MLB Network and was a WFAN with Mike Francesa in New York forever, probably the best sports radio show there's ever been. And he is all flapping limbs and histrionics and shrieking at the top of his lungs, but it's all authentic with him. He's just a crazy, passionate sports fan. And Stephen A., you know, it felt like an act for a long time, but he's really honed it to the point that you always believe what he's saying. He believes what he's saying, and it's certainly not journalism, but it's really entertaining. And I hate all of those harsh word, but it's how I feel. I almost all of those debate shows, especially the ones involving Skip Bayless, but Stephen A. and Russo on Wednesdays on First Take on ESPN is actually wildly entertaining. And I never thought I'd say or write that, but it's the truth.
All right, look, if you say it, then I need to check it out because I respect your opinion. I have, I go back and forth on Stephen A. I don't even know if it's still on. I don't like his ESPN radio show. But he is a very smart guy, and I think he is passionate about his opinions. I mean, maybe Mad Dog brings out the best in him, or vice versa.
Yeah, I think they get a kick out of each other, and they like ratcheting it up to even higher levels against each other. But Stephen A is a really interesting case career-wise. He was an NBA beat writer for a long time. When our job opened up, I'd say like 10 years ago at the Globe, he was kind of in flux in his career because ESPN had let him go at one point, and he applied for our Celtics beat writer job that Gary Washburn ended up getting when Mark Spears left for ESPN. And, he ended up either not taking it or not getting it. I'm not really sure how that went. I don't think he was offered it. And then he ended up having success again in New York with his radio show you mentioned. ESPN brought him back. And it caught on to the point that he's the highest paid on-air employee. ESPN, he makes almost $12 million a year. So it's been a heck of a career arc from NBA beat writer to TV talking head that makes an eight-figure salary.
Yeah, that's an interesting arc indeed. Finally, baseball's back since we spoke with you last time. Owners and the players worked out their differences. We're on an accelerated schedule to get to an April 7th opening day. And the Red Sox have got some work to do between now and then. They did make a couple of moves yesterday to shore up the bullpen and get a couple of left-handed arms. Will they make a big move?
Yeah, you know, John Heyman is usually a mouthpiece for Scott Boras. Floated the Red Sox as a potential landing point for Freddie Freeman, which is interesting because the A's, the Braves are out. They traded for Matt Olson today and gave up a really interesting prospect package to get him to play first base. So they're letting a guy who's a beloved player and a great player for them go, which makes you wonder what kind of contract he's getting from the Yankees or Dodgers, who are said to be the two top suitors, or somebody else that might be a surprise in this. But it's really nice to be talking at this point about transactions and even crazy salaries rather than competitive balance tax and arbitration debates and all of that stuff. So we'll see. The Red Sox need a right-handed bat more than a left one, and a left-handed one, and could probably use another dependable arm in the rotation. But another surprise this last year, and this is probably going to be a pretty good team again.
Looking forward to it. Chad Fenn of the Boston Globe with us here on Downtown. Thanks as always, Chad. We'll check in with you again very soon.
Thanks, Rich. And don't hold me to that Stephen A. stuff. May have just been a weird day for me, and I could certainly turn around on that anytime soon.
We can erase the tapes very easily.
Thanks, Rich.
All right, we'll see you, Chad. Chad Fenn with us on Downtown.